Hello everyone, I'm Dr. David Perlmutter and welcome to the Empowering Neurologist. Today I have the opportunity, the great opportunity, to interview Dr. Stephanie Seneff. She is a senior research scientist at the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory in Cambridge, Massachusetts. She has a BS degree from MIT in biology and a PhD from MIT in electrical engineering and in computer science as well. But her recent interests have focused on the role of various toxic chemicals in the environment, as well as micronutrient deficiencies in health, with a special emphasis on the pervasive herbicide glyphosate that's used in more than 750 products around the world. She has published extensively in peer-reviewed literature with over 24 peer-reviewed literature citations to her credit, specifically on these topics. So I'm really looking forward to today's interview. So Dr. Seneff, I am really honored that you chose to spend some time with us today. I've been following, as I mentioned to you earlier, following your work for quite some time. And I want to lead off by asking, how does an electrical engineer and computer science and artificial intelligence person get so involved in glyphosate and its ramifications?
It's an excellent question. And I have to admit, I did not expect to be at this point in my life at this place. I really, 9 years ago was when I started this journey, and it was really because I was seeing exponential growth in autism in this country, and I knew that was a huge problem. I saw that most of the research funds were directed towards genetics, and I knew it wasn't a genetic problem because that doesn't happen that fast. That's not exponential growth. So I figured somebody needed to take a look and see if there could, if one could find an environmental factor or multiple factors that could be causing this epidemic. And so I decided to just take on that task. I knew that I had biology background because I have a degree, undergraduate degree from MIT in biology. I've always been interested in biology, kept that up. I have a PhD in computer science and electrical engineering, and I've done a great deal of work on analyzing human language and using it for computer dialogue systems. So I knew how to process human language. I knew how to turn those skills into something that could process biological language. And so databases, medical databases, doing statistical analyses, analyzing the research literature, looking for patterns. I knew how to do all of that. And I thought, well, let me just take this on, see what I can find. 9 years ago, I have to confess, it took me 5 years of searching with frustration, because by the end of 5 years, I knew that I hadn't found the answer. And I had some hints. I knew that the autistic kids had problems with their gut. Many of them had gut problems. I knew there was a problem with dysbiosis of the gut microbes. I knew they had a sulfur deficiency problem and an impaired sulfur metabolism, impaired sulfur management, homeostasis. Sulfur was a huge problem for them. And I didn't have an answer for what was causing either one of those problems. So I was frustrated. And that was when I got a chance to hear Don Huber, Professor Don Huber, speak for 2 hours at a conference in Indianapolis where I happened to be speaking also. So it was very serendipitous. I didn't even know the word glyphosate when I walked into that meeting 3.5 years ago. And Don Huber totally educated me. In 2 hours, I recognized that I had my solution. I was very confident by the end of his lecture.
Louis Pasteur says that chance favors the prepared mind. So you were prepared. You were just
I was totally prepared.
There was a blank to be filled here.
Yes, and his and everything he said that glyphosate does were the things that I knew autism had. So it was like hand in glove.
Let me take a step back. I mean, there is still pushback in the autistic community to really sort of continue to look upon this as a primarily genetic disease and to continue to expend resources looking for the genetic link. And, you know, the simplistic approach would indicate that this cannot be a genetic issue, or it wouldn't be expanding at the rate that it is expanding, because there hasn't been the change in the genome over time that would explain that. It has to be something epigenetic.
It's absolutely obvious that it cannot be simply a genetic problem. I think what's happening is that the kids who happen to have certain genes that are already compromised, and those genes are the ones that are affected, they're going to get hit first. But everybody's going to get hit eventually, because we've got escalating growth in the use of glyphosate. Every day, more glyphosate poisoning from the food, and more kids are going to get autism until it's completely unmanageable. That's my prediction for the future.
Now, in this first graph that I will show, you correlate the rise in the use of glyphosate to the rise in the diagnosis of autistic spectrum disorder. And some might argue that, well, that's simply a correlation. Let's talk more now about causation. I mean, how can we link what glyphosate does to the microbiome, what it does to glutathione metabolism, et cetera, and the roles that those issues may play in terms of ultimately manifesting in the clinical diagnosis?
Yeah, I mean, I find it really fascinating that there's such a denial, there's a fierce denial that this correlation means anything, which is just really surprising to me, because I have not been able to find any other toxic chemical in the environment that matches as well. And this is in the food. And the kids are eating lots of soy, lots of corn and wheat, you know, peanuts. All of these things are contaminated with glyphosate. So to me, it makes total sense. It's by far the most used herbicide in this country. And it is going up exponentially, exactly in step with the autism. So there's all of that evidence to say, geez, I really should take a look and see whether. It invites you to say, well, look, this matches. Let's see if there is a biological explanation. And if there is, then the correlation becomes much more convincing as a causative relationship. And that's, of course, what I did. And Don Huber helped me a lot because he already walked in and said microbiome. He said sulfur. I mean, those were my two things. They were there in his lecture. And he didn't know any of my work.
More recently, you've looked upon the role of glyphosate and glycine in terms of that interaction. I want to get to that in just a moment. But I just want to, for our viewers, I recently posted a blog about the CHARGE study in California demonstrating an increased risk of having a child with autism if mother lived in close proximity to agricultural concern that was using pesticides. And when I wrote the blog and cited the reference, there was a huge pushback from the autism community that, you know, why would I even be calling attention to this, you know, UCLA study, because there's really no problem here. And, you know, I would say that as a clinician in dealing with families with this issue, it is a very real problem. And, you know, you mentioned the growth of the incidence of autism spectrum disorder is really breathtaking. And, you know, that's where you're focused. You're taking a step back, and I'm sure you're taking your criticisms, but you're asking the question why. And I think you've connected two very, very powerful dots here.
Yes. And in fact, the whole glycine issue, glycine is actually a source of methyl groups. And a lot of people in the autism community are well aware of methylation deficiency. MTHFR is a gene that's often connected to autism, which is a methylation gene. You know, it's involved in the methylation pathway. And folate, and people talk a lot about folate deficiency, you know, and cerebrofolate deficiency, and all of these issues with autism. The autistic parents are well aware of the issue with folate is what carries the methyl group. Glycine actually provides the methyl group through the glycine cleavage system.
So, and what is this relationship between glyphosate and glycine that you're so? And in fact, you have a paper coming out about that.
I do have a paper coming out. We're waiting for proofs, and I'm every day I wake up and hope it's the day the proofs are going to arrive, because it's been passed all the review process. It's ready to go, and I'm very excited about this paper. This was, I worked passionately on this paper during December and January, and it was breathtaking what I found, because we had been, so Anthony Samsel and I should say, have been doing, we've written a series of glyphosate papers together, and this one is glyphosate 5, so we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 behind it. One was a general one where we proposed these ideas that I had learned from Don Huber's lecture about the sulfur problems and the gut dysbiosis, and also cytochrome P450 issues in the liver, which is huge, actually. I've only recently come to realize that, you know, I know that there are many weeds that are developing resistance to glyphosate, and that's why they've had to use more and more glyphosate every year on the core crops. I should say, in fact, that there's this GMO gene that they've come up with. They really introduced it into the system in 1998 that is a GMO Roundup Ready gene that allows the crops to be resistant to Roundup. That is a huge, huge change in 1998. And it's really since then that we've seen this enormous growth in the use of glyphosate on these crops, and also careless use, where you can just spray it from the airplane over the plant rather than having to be very selective and just make sure you just focus on the weeds, because if you expose the plant, it will die. Once you have that gene, the plant is not going to die if it gets sprayed with glyphosate. You could be careless, and you get much, much more glyphosate in the food chain. But these glyphosate-resistant weeds are actually, many of them are resistant because of Cype enzymes. So they've managed to overproduce cytochrome P450 enzymes to protect themselves from glyphosate. Monsanto says that the reason, the way that glyphosate kills plants is through a pathway called the shikimate pathway, which human cells don't have. And that's the wonderful argument that says that we're safe, that glyphosate doesn't harm us because we don't have
that.
This pathway.
I just really love that argument.
Yeah, and of course our gut microbes all do have that pathway and they use it to make essential things that we can't make because we don't have it. I mean, it's very clear that that's a problem, but the Cype enzymes are maybe even a bigger problem. And the fact that the plants, the weeds can develop resistance by overproducing Cype enzymes says that the Cype enzymes are a big problem in the plants as well. And they're a problem in the humans.
I just want to step that down just a bit for our listeners and viewers. And that is, we were told that we should not fear glyphosate when it was introduced because it works on this pathway that you mentioned called the shikimate pathway, which is a 7-step pathway whereby carbohydrate derivatives are transformed into amino acids, some specific acids, which are called the aromatic amino acids. But we were told that doesn't happen in humans.
Right.
Now that we know that we are 10 times more bacteria than we are humans, it becomes a very real issue. So I think what you're saying, and I know what you're saying, I want to merely make the point, and that is that this glyphosate that is residual on so many of our foods is changing the vitality, the array of the bacteria that live within us. And an interesting report recently came out indicating that virtually every strain of bifidobacteria that is tested is able to some degree to produce folate. Now that we are altering the array of bacteria, changing the availability of bifidobacteria and the role of folate deficiency in autism, again, some more dots may be connected.
Absolutely. And in fact, folate is directly a product of the shikimate pathway. It comes from that pathway. So we can expect it to be deficient if our microbes can't make it. And we depend upon them to make those precursors to folate and to make the folate to provide it to us. I mean, we depend on them for so many nutrients. So if they're disrupted by glyphosate, we're going to be harmed by that. It's not like we can just be fine when our microbes are not healthy.
Recently, the FDA announced that they were creating an organization or a committee to look at actually making public aware of glyphosate levels in certain foods. It was kind of positive moment for some of us. And how did you respond when you heard that news?
I was surprised. I mean, I don't expect them to do anything, you know, so I'm always surprised when anything happens. And I suspect it really is through the efforts of people like Zen Honeycutt that this happened because, you know, she's a mother, and she discovered that when she put her kids on an organic diet, they got well. She had one that was kind of, I think, behavioral issues, even possibly autistic signs. And she had, you know, problems with kids having rashes around their lips. They had, you know, issues with the food allergies. And she switched her family to organic diet and saw enormous improvement very quickly in her children's health. And then she said, well, okay, we're going to measure, you know. And so she has spearheaded efforts to get, she got glyphosate tested in wines in California. And I think it was 12 different wines, including biodynamic wines. Every single one she tested came out positive, which significantly less glyphosate in the biodynamics wines, but not zero.
Well, you know, that's the whole notion of, well, the fellow next door uses glyphosate, but we don't. In other words, it's sprayed from an airplane on one set of crops, but not on the other. And I often say,
it's not like a wall between them.
Oh, my gosh. It's like having a no peeing zone in a public pool. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were recently in Europe, and really across France, the vineyards are sprayed fairly heavily with glyphosate. In fact, we recently got back from New Zealand, and I'm thinking, well, New Zealand is going to be, you know, far more involved in the green movement. And even olive trees are sprayed around the base with glyphosate just to get rid of the weeds. And, you know, yet they say, well, we don't spray our crops. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think the big deal is that we are recognizing that glyphosate residues in our food challenge our microbiome. I recently had the opportunity to meet with Professor Claude Bourguignon in France, and he talked about the incredible damage that the glyphosate is doing to the soil microbiome and how that compromises the health of the plant.
Absolutely. I've been learning more and more about that. And also the fungus, all the issues that we're having with various fungus problems, both in plants and in animals. And glyphosate induces an overgrowth of fungus. And so I think a lot of those issues are derived from glyphosate. And, of course, it's depleting, it's hurting the earthworms as well. I mean, studies have shown that earthworms get something like Parkinson's disease when they're exposed to glyphosate. You can imagine an earthworm with Parkinson's is not going to be able to do its job.
I'm going to have a tough time imagining. I'll do that after the program. But, you know, it's interesting that you mention that because a couple of the olive growers in New Zealand that I spoke with said exactly that, they are suddenly being confronted with fungus issues mm-hmm. and having to spray the entire tree now for fungus, and they never have had that problem. They're saying, well, it's probably due to El Nino, and we've had a wet year. And
right.
Sure
they always have a reason. It's amazing how well people are able to dismiss glyphosate and not think of it as the problem.
Let's take a step back just a moment and talk about glyphosate as a chelating agent.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, glyphosate binds to metals very strongly. And, of course, these are the minerals that are really essential as cofactors for many of our enzymes, zinc, cobalamin, manganese, cobalt, which is in cobalamin. Cobalamin is the B vitamin. Zinc, cobalt, manganese. Iron, copper, all these things get chelated by glyphosate, and the biological systems have developed very, very sophisticated mechanisms to transport and deliver these ions, these minerals to where they need to do the actions that they need to do. And in the wrong place, these things are toxic. So you're working with something that is just like oxygen, is both toxic and tremendously beneficial. And the systems have worked out a way to transport them. If you think of an oxygen transport truck, it's got very thick walls, you know, to really protect from the possibility of an explosion with the oxygen. It's similar. They have special molecules that are actually developed, even produced by the microbes, to carry iron, for example.
And so I like the metaphor of oxygen. Everybody thinks, well, oxygen, well, what could be wrong with that? And of course, you know, in our experience with hyperbarics, we have to be very, very aware of pressures and percentages, FiO2, of oxygen. And you're right, you know, you could kill yourself by over drinking pure, wonderful water.
Yes.
So you're right. Everything has to be in balance. You know, just in speaking with you, I just had a thought that I really want our viewers to recognize how important this discussion is. We're still very early in the game, and I would say even 5 years from now, here we are in 2016, when you look at this video, you'll realize the incredible work that Dr. Seneff is doing in really raising our awareness of this clear and present danger. This is a global issue. 1.35 million metric tons of this stuff, to be nice, is used in more than 750 products around the world. And it's not just Roundup.
Right.
You know, this goes into all kinds of stuff to kill weeds, but also even to help ripen wheat. So even though wheat isn't genetically modified, here, wheat, which is, you know, 20% of American calories, has been sprayed with this stuff by and large.
Yes, wheat, oats, barley, peanuts, I was really surprised to hear. And I suspect that's why we have an epidemic in peanut allergy. When you look at the allergies to soy, to wheat, to peanuts, these are all things that are heavily dosed with glyphosate. And I think the glyphosate is causing those food allergies. It's a major, major factor in all of those food allergies.
So can you tell us in your life now, what it's like and what kind of pushback you've had and how industry may be responding to your work?
I mean, they're trying their best to portray me as a quack, as a, that I'm not educated to. I mean, here I have a biology degree from MIT with a PhD in computer science, electrical engineering. I have 4 degrees from MIT. Most people don't have that many degrees, you know. I'm pretty well educated. I don't feel that I'm ill-equipped to say what I'm saying. But they're going to say that I am. I don't have graduate degrees in biology. You know, I don't have any medical degrees. So they're going to always look for ways to say that I don't have the knowledge or the expertise to be able to say what I'm saying. And
well, then who does?
I know. Well, that's what I would like to ask.
Industry.
And I would love to see.
So until now, who has the FDA relied upon for the data? And it's been the manufacturer.
Yes.
And of course, they're starting the hen house.
Exactly so. I mean, it's just amazing. And in fact, Anthony Samsel has obtained huge piles of documents from the early studies done by DuPont, you know, that were commissioned by Monsanto to evaluate glyphosate. And Anthony is finding all kinds of evidence of toxicity in those studies. The solution was to label them secret and then not really reveal to the EPA, you know, exactly what they had found. The EPA was sloppy in their looking through these studies. And they agreed that this chemical was non-toxic to humans prematurely. I mean, I think the evidence was already there in those early studies. And the industry probably knew that, but their solution was just to label them secret and not allow anybody to see them. And once they got the EPA to agree that it's fine, now they're home free. You know, it seems like once you get a regulated agency to say this stuff is okay, it's very hard to put the genie back in the box.
Well, when the World Health Organization, publishing in the journal The Lancet, indicates that glyphosate is a probable human carcinogen, yet we still go to the hardware store and see bottles of Roundup sitting on the shelf. That's a probable human carcinogen after a fairly extensive review of the literature.
I think the evidence is very strong, and actually the evidence is strong from those early studies, and Anthony and I have written about that in our Glyphosate 4 paper. We talked about glyphosate and cancer, and we discussed those early studies, and actually we published some of the results from those secret documents in our paper.
Let us get back just to, you had mentioned cytochrome P450 and sulfation pathways. So again, for our viewers, these are really important pathways that our bodies use to detoxify when we're exposed to things.
That's
both,
right.
Both changing the chemicals and then in phase two detoxification, water solubilizing things so that we can get rid of stuff through stool and through our urine. So how big of an issue do you feel that may be playing in terms of the effects of glyphosate exposure?
I think it's huge. I think it's a huge part of the problem. And it's the cytochrome P450 enzymes, for example, they activate vitamin D. So we have an epidemic in vitamin D deficiency. And I think it's directly attributable to glyphosate suppressing the CYP enzymes in the liver. The CYP enzymes also produce bile acids. And the bile acids are very important for digestive function, particularly for metabolizing fats. So we end up with digestive issues with eating fatty foods because of an inadequate supply of bile acids due to the CYP enzyme dysfunction. And as you mentioned, they detox so many different toxic chemicals. So everything else in the environment becomes much more toxic because your CYP enzymes aren't working well. And so we have so many other chemicals we're exposed to. And in fact, I think the bees, you know, people talk a lot about the neonicotinoids, and they're right. The neonicotinoids are a problem for the bees, but the bees rely on their CYP enzymes to break those down and to detox them. And their CYP enzymes get disrupted by the glyphosate. So they've got a 1-2 punch there. The glyphosate is working synergistically with these other toxic chemicals to cause harm.
I'd like to lead our viewers to another interview I did last year with Dr. Derek McFabe, where Dr. McFabe talked about the changes in the microbiome, likely induced again by glyphosate, that change what are called the short-chain fatty acids, the ratio of the short-chain fatty acids with an overabundance of what's called propionate or propionic acid, and the very toxic effects that that has on brain cells and specifically upon the mitochondria, and his work in laboratory animals, and we have his videos on our site. I urge you to look at that. So, you know, best case scenario, what are we going to do moving forward? What can anybody do moving forward?
Obviously organic, you know, eating organic. And the good news is organic is growing very, very fast. The market demand is very strong, and people are rising to the occasion. So I think if I'm a farmer and I have to expose myself to these toxic chemicals to grow this toxic food, and I'm told that if I just grow organic, I get a significant increase in the value of my corn crop, you know, and I don't have to expose myself to those chemicals. I think a lot of farmers should be thinking, geez, maybe I'll try to switch to organic. And that's not easy. It's not easy to switch, unfortunately, because your soil has been contaminated for so many years. So you've got to have a period of time in which you're not organic, even though you're not using the chemicals anymore. And that's, of course, a hard period to get through.
The crossover, yes.
Yeah. So once farmers can get past that crossover period, then they're really in great shape because they can sell these organic crops. And I think that hopefully we have more and more farmers recognizing that that's a better path for them. And, of course, it's also going to help global warming. This is something people maybe don't realize. But when you grow crops organically, in fact, there's a guy named Ben Dobson that I just recently learned about. He has a wonderful 10-minute video on a TED Talk. Right. And it's really great. And he's an organic farmer, and his parents were too, I think. So he's sort of been brought up with this. But he talks about how if you grow a cover crop during the off season, instead of just leaving your dirt, bare dirt, then the cover crop is actually grabbing carbon dioxide out of the air and putting it into the soil as organic matter, which is making the soil much healthier and also fighting climate change. So not only can we, slow down climate change, we can reverse it by making a conscious effort to grow food, even to grow crops that we're not going to eat, just to grow plants and let them pull that carbon back into the soil, improve the soil, improve the air. I mean, it's just like, what's not to like about that? So
how is your message getting out? I mean, how well do you think it's being received? And beyond that, what can people do to help get this message out?
Yeah, I mean, I always tell everybody, you know, if you believe what I'm saying, tell everybody you know what you learned, because we just need to get people informed, because I think a lot of people just don't know. And I see so many people with children that maybe are suffering from, you know, eczema or asthma, you know, various problems that the children are having, and the parents.
Inflammatory issues and autoimmune.
Yeah,
issues.
Exactly. And if they only knew that it's that simple, they would do it, but they don't realize it. You know, it's just they think the food has to be safe. The government wouldn't let this happen. I mean, they just cannot believe that it's as simple a matter as just buying organic food. But
you
I think that's
I'm,
a huge.
I'm pleading with people, please pay attention to this information. It's so important. And you know, you're right. Most people don't want to really pay attention to it at all. I want to live their lives come what may and hope that there is a treatment. Well, you know, as it relates to autism, for example, there is no treatment available. There are behavioral management ideas that are pharmaceutical that are, you know, not treating the problem. They are treating symptoms. And now that I called it a problem, I'll probably, you know, hear about that as a comment as well. It is a problem. I mean, when you're developing a generation that has a 1 in 50 children being born that may not be able to fully care for themselves as they mature, I think that's a real issue that we have to pay attention to, especially when we look at work like you are doing that's pointing to a possible cause here. So rather than focus on treating an issue, let's talk about preventing it and treat the fire, not just the smoke.
It seems like it's such a wonderful piece of information for someone who's struggling with why are my kids so sick, and to say all you have to do is buy organic food. You know, it's that simple. And you think, well, you know, it costs more, and people are so cost conscious with food. It's like, I want to get their food cheap. They should get over that. They should say, I want to buy the highest quality eggs I can find. And you are getting value in that extra quality. I mean, I compared a non-organic versus an organic egg. Amazing differences. The one that was a Stop and Shop variety, you know, very thin shell, very watery white, very pale, small, yellow yolk. And then the other one had a strong shell, very sort of like the white was very thick, you know, sort of like gel. And the yolk was big and very dark yellow. I mean, enormous differences. That is all nutrition. That is much better nutrition. Plus, you don't have the toxic glyphosate in there. I mean, actually, you do, because someone tested an organic egg and it tested positive for glyphosate. So even the organic chickens are getting exposed somehow.
Possibly either by cross-contamination from aerial spray
the
or air in their
butter,
feet. Who
yeah.
knows? You know,
well, they're supposedly not eating.
You wonder though. I mean, they're not eating GMO feed, so, but
right.
but if it's wheat based, it may still have been treated with glyphosate. There's a film that you know Jeffrey Smith, I know, and he
yes.
has a film coming out. I think that's going to do a lot to raise. We've interviewed him recently, raise public awareness as to the gravity of the situation, and beyond that, it's actionable. Okay, what can you do to help? So. I'm hoping that glass is half full and that we're going to make the lemonade out of the lemons. But I just want to really, really applaud you for what you're doing. And I know, I can tell you, I do know what it's like to step out and be challenged. And I think that's the only way we're going to move the ball down the field is by stepping out and challenging the status quo. So I want you to know how much I appreciate it. And I know I'm speaking for our viewers as well that... we really, really need people like you. So thank you very, very much.
And I wish that there were more who would be willing to step out, because I think people are very afraid of being attacked, you know, having their reputation ruined. I mean, that's maybe legitimate reasons to be afraid. But if more people would speak out, we would have strength in numbers, and then they would not be as able to discredit those people who are speaking out, you know. But I think they're able to just make people so scared that they don't want to speak up, even if they feel that there's an issue. Even if they agree they don't want to be in the limelight, they don't want to be attacked. You know, it's unfortunate that that works.
Well, listen, thanks again, and we're looking forward to the new publication. Can't wait to see that. I hope you'll send me a copy. You have my email address.
Mm-hmm.
And